Hello and welcome to the Unmissables podcast. I'm Boyd Hilton. I'm joined, as ever, by my two glorious colleagues, Stephanie Seelan.
We're your side chicks. We're your pod side chicks. That's what we are.
Slightly sexist.
I'm not sure. I don't know if I feel comfortable being Boyd's chick.
Yeah.
If anything, he's my chick.
Right. Well, steady. Let's not go down that road. This is the voice of Kay Ribeiro.
Hello.
And together, we trawl through the world of popular culture, the big things happening in popular culture, and it just so happens that most of the time they're huge television programmes, but we also mention some films and other stuff as well. I'm definitely going to mention a film this week that Kay and I, spoiler alert preview, went to see the premiere of Murder on the Orient Express, which is out now, and we had a massive discussion and debate about it. Maybe we'll try and boil that down to its essence soon on this podcast. But the main meat of the show...
Hold on.
Are you interrupting the menu?
Well, yeah, just because... When did you go to see the Orient Express?
Where?
When?
The other night.
Well, where was I?
You're always busy. You're always out. You're always doing stuff. No, we can only get two
I'm also
two
a
seats.
Massive Agatha Christie Poirot fan. That's what he should have said. That he was doing me a favour.
I knew Kay's a big Agatha Christie Poirot fan. I didn't quite realise she's the world's foremost expert on Hercule Poirot and all representations of him.
No, she really is. She talks about it a lot.
This is no joke. Oh. Yeah.
Did she talk the whole way through? Oh, we'll come to that.
She didn't talk during the film. That would have been outrageous. Anyway, but the main meat of the show is going to be previews of three... This is a drama special. This is a TV drama special. Did you know that? No.
Yes,
it is.
We watch the stuff.
Peaky Blinders, which starts next Wednesday on BBC Two, new fourth series.
Thank the Lord. It's back.
It's back. Big one-off 90-minute drama, The Boy with the Top Knot, next week on BBC Two on Monday. That's a huge big drama event, Kay.
Yes, it is.
And an even bigger drama event, the new Sunday night period drama slot on BBC One, coming from next Sunday, the 12th of November, is Howard's End, the E.M. Forster classic.
Not Howard's Way, as me and Steph have been calling
it. Not Howard's Way, which is the yachting drama that was on in the 80s or 90s.
When I saw it, I was like, oh, they've remade it. Yeah.
No, it's Howard's End.
We've got drama from all angles.
Only Connect. Okay, remember?
Yep.
It's the epigraph of that novel by Ian Forster. And, of course, we'll talk about other stuff as well in the opening segment, where we like to talk about what we've been watching this week. Reading. Last week you read a book,
I read a book, yeah.
Have you read any more books this week?
No, because one a year is enough for me.
That's
my
enough.
Little
true.
Eyes can't take
true.
Anymore.
True, that's true. I hope you're back watching stuff.
I'm back watching
usually
stuff.
On Netflix, let's face it.
Yep.
Sometimes legally. And, let's start with Kay. Kay, what have you been watching this week? Oh, you looked at me like I was mad there while you took a sip of your...
She's taking a sip of her tea. Right, first of all, I watched Louis Theroux talking to anorexia. Did anyone watch it? It is so good. I think it might be my favourite of the ones he's done recently. And it is just brilliant. Because as we know, Louis is a great documentary maker. He's very good at talking to people. But I think with this one, he's able to connect with them on a deeper level than he has with any of his other subjects.
Only connect.
Yeah, because why do you keep saying Only Connect?
Sorry, just to explain, Only Connect is Howard's End. I studied Howard's End for A level, so like Kay is an expert on Poirot.
Right,
I'm an expert on Howard's End, and the epigraph, I think it's called, or the kind of motto of it, in the book by Ian Forster, is Only Connect. It's all about connecting people from different classes and backgrounds, and it's a great thing through life to think only connect. So anyway, that's why I
thought you were
Kay.
Talking about that really difficult game show.
No, that's where they got the title from. So Only Connect, the really difficult game show hosted by what's her name?
Oh my God, it's impossible.
Yeah,
it is impossible.
It's named after the Ian Forster used to Only Connect in Howard's End. And now we've just interrupted Kay and her talking
furious.
About the movie
that's
through
fine.
Show. Carry on.
No, but it's Only Connect. It's absolutely right, because that's what he does, and he's brilliant at it. And he just, I mean, we all know obviously about anorexia, but I feel like I learned so much more from watching this. It was very informative and educational, obviously very emotional. And he talks to these three women, well, more than three women, who are in, some of them are in a facility and don't leave, some are allowed to go home. And it like obviously explores the reasons why, you know, they suffer from this eating disorder. Some of them, what a lot of them seem to break it down to is one, a feeling of like unworthiness, which is obviously incredibly sad, and another part is down to having a trauma either in their past, like being bullied, or down to a bad relationship with someone, and then this is their way of kind of having control. It's a very much a control mechanism that they start, you know, doing this, and a way of numbing the pain. Anyway, so he talks to these three particular women, and one of them has been in anorexia. She's like in her I think she's in her 60s now. She's been anorexic for 20, 30 years. God. And, like, it's...
Is it depressing, though?
No, it's not... I mean, it is obviously a depressing subject, but there is a bit of light at the end of the tunnel because some of them look like they will make a recovery, and that's the thing. Like, it's not going to be anytime soon. They say sometimes it can take up to 8 to 10 years, you know, oh, God, it can take even longer than that. But this woman, the one in her 60s, she's... does want to get better, but she almost has like these kind of a psychological game with Louis in that, you know, she has put on a bit of weight, so she's like, oh, you know, how do you feel like look and stuff, and then he goes, I'm not going to answer this because I know that I can't give you, I'll say the wrong thing, and she goes, yeah, because if you say, yeah, I have, I'm going to stop eating for a week, and if he says she hasn't, then obviously that feeds into, you know, it's incredible. And then there's one woman who is really feisty, I really like her, and she just can't even see that she's got a problem. She's very like, she gives him short shrift, she's very like, she's very engaging, funny, but she just can't see that she's got a problem. But he's able to like really just get to the nub of the issue with her. And then there's one woman, and it's really sad, she's really young, and she's had it for like, I don't know, 10 years at anorexia, and she wants to get better, but because the illness has kind of infantilized her, she's scared of getting better because, you know, then she's going to go out to this. Yeah, she'll have to move on. She's in this big scary world where, you know, and so it's just, I honestly, I'd urge everyone, it's a must watch. It's on iPlayer. So check it out. It's particularly good. Louis Theroux talking to anorexia. The other thing is I did a bit of listening with my ears.
Listening with your ears?
I did.
Did you listen to a pod, another pod apart from this?
Yeah, the Tim Ferriss show with Arianna Huffington. Oh.
Look, you listen to who?
Tim Ferriss? You don't know about Tim Ferriss? Tim Ferriss is a legend.
Is he?
Tim Ferriss podcast. He's an absolute legend. I can't believe
I can't tell if you're joking.
I'm not joking, no. Oh. I don't. I've, this is
Kay. This is Kay. No, this is Kay's forum. Kay,
well, he talks to like inspirational people, and Arianna Huffington was one of them. And obviously, she is the founder of HuffPost,
yeah,
as we know. And
where they don't pay people for their contributions. I'm not sure how inspirational that is.
Oh, Boyd, come on.
Boyd, stop it. You've come gone on out of it at this thing where you're just, you know, stealing Kay's thunder.
Listen, no, we've all done stuff for free. I mean, hello, this is how I got my job at Heat. I did work experience.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean,
it's slightly different. Anyway,
I know it's different.
No,
it is different. But anyway,
let's not get bogged down in my snotty comments.
I understand what you're saying.
Snooty Magooty.
But yes.
She's a fascinating figure.
She is a fascinating figure. And she talks about how she like set up HuffPo, but also, which I found really interesting, is she, when she was living in Greece, because that's where she's from, and she talks about her like very kind of poor upbringing, and she really wanted to go to Cambridge. She's seen a picture in a magazine of Cambridge, and she decided she wanted to go there, and all her family were going...
Cambridge the place or Cambridge the university?
University, sorry.
Oh, right.
And said, you know...
Just a day
give
trip to Cambridge.
Do you know what?
Do some punting.
Yeah, I want to get one of them bikes with the big sticks.
Anyway.
I
don't
know. And she said, you know, her dad was like, you know, kind of give up that dream. You don't speak English. Kind of get over it. But her mum, who was quite eccentric or like forward thinking, who's very into visualisation, was like, found a way of taking her there, just to, not even to meet anyone, just to look around, taking her surroundings, so that when she came back, she could really just visualise that and focus on that. And then she studied, and she got a scholarship to Cambridge. She became the first, no, I think the third woman of the debate society, you know, like the union.
Yeah.
And like, it's just done incredible things.
Basically, she visualised going to Cambridge, and then she studied. If that could happen just in real life,
it can happen.
Amazing.
Visualisation, it's a thing.
Yeah, I'm going to visualise... being the next president of the United States.
You would
so that
be
wasn't
great.
Born,
you would
born
honestly,
born
no.
I mean, but you're more intelligent, so it's fine.
You would be great.
So that's an episode of podcast.
Yes, it's one episode.
Podcast.
And he speaks
so
to different people.
So the series is, who, like, what are the
people?
The
Tim Ferriss Show.
Oh, he's spoken to everyone. He's done Jamie Foxx. He does loads. He's done Kevin Costner. He's just absolutely, okay. You should check him out.
You
he's
need
really
to get
good.
On it. Okay.
He's really, really inspirational. You have to fast forward like 10 minutes in, though, because he's got so many sponsors.
Yeah.
It's
well, like Mark Maron, like the WTF.
Yeah,
In the podcast space between Mark Maron and WTF, who is very like kind of emotional, I don't
right.
know, you know, interrupty. I love the WTF podcast where he interviews two famous people each week or sometimes more. And then there's the Alec Baldwin one.
Yeah.
So where does this one fit in?
So Tim Ferriss is very like practical things and learning how people have made themselves better in their life.
Okay.
It's kind of very...
And he lets them talk.
Yeah.
He lets them just like...
Extraordinary.
No, but you know how Alec Baldwin just... my beef is like he interrupts every 30 seconds about an anecdote about Alec Baldwin.
Like I interrupt. Do they have policymakers. You know, Alec Baldwin.
The policy.
Let it go.
He
does have policymakers on there.
Actors, directors, writers, and policymakers.
Okay. I think that might be better than your Prince Albert impression.
Listen, boy, they did have on there like the people who were like in charge of all the zoning. He had the person that was in charge of like all of the historical buildings in New York. Boy, this is a long-running argument. This is a long-running argument with me, Boyd.
Can I just say this?
If he didn't have policymakers on there, I'd say, do you know what, boys, you're right. But he does have policymakers on there.
So no policymakers on this programme.
Well, God, we'd be in trouble then, wouldn't we?
You don't know what me and Steph are doing in our spare time.
Oh, that's true.
Making a lot of policies. Anyway, that was the other thing.
And what's the name of that podcast?
The Tim Ferriss Show.
Excellent. I'm going to check it out.
You really should. It's great. Start with Ariana Huffington.
I'm going to.
Today?
I'm going to do it. As soon as I leave here, I'm going to crank it up on my iPod, put the headphones on, listen to it on the way to the Apple Store where I pick up my iPhone 10. Anyway, hopefully.
You will do any kind of name
I was supposed to pick up
drop.
Hours ago. That's like not a digital... I'm not getting anything out of it.
That is a technical
name sounds
like
you're getting
drop.
A phone, boy.
You will name drop.
For it.
You're name Boston dropping a phone. You're name dropping a phone.
Anyway. I want to see a receipt for that.
Anyway,
what have you been listening to, watching, reading this week, Steph?
Hey, I don't like to bring up old arguments that we've had, right?
Oh, God, here we go.
No, I don't.
I'm
I
ready
don't,
for you today.
But
just
I'm
so you
forced
know.
To, okay? Now, I just cast regular
it's
listeners
to be John Bishop,
know,
isn't it?
That we all agreed together to watch a little series on the Netflix called Riverdale, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, do you remember when we all agreed to watch that?
Well, Steph, as you know, I don't have Netflix. So, I mean, I don't know how you thought that was going to happen unless I'm going to come for a viewing party at your house.
Okay.
Which I'm happy to do.
Please do, come. And you not having Netflix is absolutely ridiculous. But anyway, right. Riverdale, because neither of you watched season one, you don't know what happened. But season two's started, and I've started watching it, and it's great. So unfortunately for you, I'm going to have to spoil it and tell you what has happened.
No.
You're never going to watch
it. If you're spoiling it for us, you're spoiling it for the listener as well.
No, because I'm only going to talk about the first episode.
Oh, okay.
I'm not going to talk about it, and there's like five episodes on.
Will you not think of the Pogs?
Listen, the Pogs. But the Pogs were with me, because when I said, let's all watch Riverdale, they were probably like, yeah, Steph, come on, let's watch Riverdale together. Unlike
you she thought in her head.
Anyway, when we left season one, okay, Kay's putting
her fingers in her ears. Yeah.
Okay, Cheryl Blossom had set fire to the mansion because she had found out who killed, I'm not going to spoil it completely, who had killed her twin brother, okay?
Yeah.
Then also Fred, who's the dad of Archie, okay, he was shot and we didn't know what happened.
Yeah.
No, I'm
what
just letting you know.
What happened to Fred?
I'm not going to spoil it. I'm just telling you, we do find out what happened. And then Hiram Lodge, who's Veronica Lodge's dad, comes back. And you know, I told you last pod that he was going to be Mark Consuelos. It is Mark Consuelos and he's great in it.
Kelly Ripa's husband.
Kelly Ripa's husband. Yeah, the job as Kelly Ripa's husband.
Live with Kelly and Mark.
No, Live with Kelly and Ryan
Kelly and
now.
Ryan.
You have to keep up. It
sorry.
Was Live with Kelly and
let's
Michael.
Let's just say, in case people don't know.
What is this?
Yeah, you know, it's good
it's
on this
good
morning,
show.
Isn't it?
It's like
it's a morning show in America. And I used to be obsessed with Live with Regis and Kelly. Regis Philbin is a legend.
Yeah.
And Kelly, they used to do it together. And it's kind of like, it's like their version of This Morning, like Richard and Judy or something. It's brilliant.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Obviously 10 times better. And and now it's her and who?
Ryan Seacrest.
Ryan Seacrest, that's it, him. Famous Heat Radio's Ryan Seacrest.
Yeah, exactly. Our friend.
Okay.
Sort of. Right. I actually also have watched some Louis Theroux stuff.
Oh, what do you?
Oh my God, it's a
Theroux
fest.
I know. And when Kay said Louis Theroux, I thought, oh no, should I mention it? But I'm just going to quickly mention it because it was. It's an older Louis Theroux that I had somehow missed. It was from 2015 by Louis Theroux's two-parter by reason of insanity, and so he.
I watched that one.
You should. Really, really.
Is
good.
It an iPlayer?
Yeah, it's on iPlayer. So I got really confused because I thought it was because I watched all the Dark States and I was like, oh, is this part of the Dark States? No, it isn't. But it just comes up as another suggestion. So it's a two-parter where it's the first time that he's been allowed to go, that someone's been allowed to go into kind of these facilities where people have committed crimes, but they're not fit to stand trial, so they are in these facilities until either they are fit to stand trial or they do their whole sentence there.
I didn't know that existed. That place existed.
Fascinating. So there's like a guy in there who he killed his dad, right? And he's like, and he's talking perfectly normally, but they're going through therapy to kind of try and understand what they did. But it's this really awful situation where you think, blimey, right? So they're going to give them so much therapy to get them to understand that what they did was wrong, but then they've got to deal with the realisation that they killed somebody, where before they're kind of living in some kind of, this is not the right thing to say, but kind of blissful ignorance in a way, that they don't know what they don't think what they did was wrong because they've obviously got a mental illness. And it was just absolutely fascinating. There's a woman in there who's like, they're never going to let me out, but what they don't realise is that I'm Jesus. It's brilliant. Oh, wow. It's absolutely brilliant. And Louis is amazing the whole way through.
I'm obsessed with Louis's eyebrows.
Yeah.
Have you ever? Yeah. I think they're even good. Better than Nick Hewer from The Apprentice. He conveys so much with his eyebrows. Mm. I was watching
really
something.
Does.
Yeah.
Great eyebrows.
He's got great eyebrows.
I just want to mention one last thing as well. Now, I know you guys are not into the true crime stuff that I am, but I did mention it a little while back. But Law and Order, True Crime, The Menendez Brothers, with Edie Falco playing the lawyer, is so good. It's a five-parter. It's on Sky. You can get it all on catch-up. It wrapped up this week. It's great. Edie Falco's amazing.
Edie Falco, the Menendez, of Sopranos fame.
Of Sopranos fame. Yeah. You know the Menendez murders, the brothers that
huge,
killed their parents.
Huge phenomenon in America.
It's kind of in the same ilk as the, you know, the OJ thing.
Yeah,
what was
it was a huge...
But no, I mean,
the People versus OJ, that series, This is, so it takes that, it dramatizes that legendary.
It's fabulous.
Yeah, no, I want to see that series, And that's on the what?
That's on Sky.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, so you can watch it on catch up.
I've learned a lot from you two in this podcast.
We aim to please.
You're not going to learn anything from me because I'm just going to go on a series of name dropping exercises as.
Hey, break habit.
Yeah.
Just you need to let me know if we're going to do Boyd's Oscar Watch. We can do that because I need to get the tings ready.
We may rest Oscar Watch this week.
Okay.
Yeah, just on the basis that.
You haven't seen any Oscar-worthy films?
Yeah, because the only film we've seen is Orient Express, Murder on the Express. I don't think that's going to win any Oscars.
Oh, poor
Kenneth. And we might win some technical ones, maybe. I don't know. Cinematography, maybe. But no, it's more TV-based discussions. So I went to two TV preview events this week.
Ooh.
One was, of course, Motherland, which we reviewed last week. Was it last week or the week before?
Last week.
The Sharon Horgan, Holly Walsh, Helen Linehan, Graham Linehan scripted excellent... half-hour comedy show about the perils of modern-day mother parenting. And they're all
mother
there,
parenting.
Except for Graham, who was back. So Graham was, ironically enough, looking after his kids while his wife was in... Helen was there at the screen.
As it should be. Life imitating art.
And they
live
in Norfolk. So, yeah, I mean,
They live in Norfolk?
Yeah, indeed.
She travelled.
Yeah, people live outside London. Yeah, I know, it's incredible, isn't it?
We love everyone from all the regions everywhere.
He must spend a fortune on the trains because he must need to be in London all the time.
I think he's pretty much happily based in
FaceTime, mobile phone.
Yeah, right. Well,
they're able to communicate.
Correct. But anyway, they showed two episodes. We previewed episode one, which we all loved, didn't we?
Oh, brilliant.
The second episode is even better.
Is it?
It's so good. It revolves around... you know Lucy Punch's character, the boss mum, the A-list mum,
the mean girl mum.
Yeah, the mean girl mum, exactly. She has this incredible... it's all about... they have a special kind of charity event to raise money for the music room, the instruments in the music room. Anyway, it climaxes with her making this incredible kind of speech to all the other mums in the school. It's phenomenal. It is incredible.
She's so awful.
Yeah.
But amazing.
Brilliantly awful, yeah. And but it was great to see them all. And they all listened to our review, is what I'm going to say. And they were very nice about it and very grateful. And it was lovely
Sharon
that
Sharon
listened to it and she was interested in you two, like Sharon. Who you were, you know, like...
I hope you bigged us up, boys.
Of course I bigged you up.
Good.
And it was great. So it was just good to have that feedback. They were all like, you know. And then I felt slightly embarrassed. I was thinking, what did we say? And I went,
I'm hastily trying to think. What did
well, as long as you didn't meet anyone who wrote Sick Note, then that'll be fine. Because obviously,
I didn't meet anyone who wrote Sick Note.
Uh-oh.
But now you mentioned I didn't meet an actress in Sick Note. And
oh my God, please don't say she listened to the podcast.
Well, no, she didn't know.
Listeners will remember that last week...
I was a bit grumpy last week.
The new Rupert Grint... it's almost like a dramedy, isn't it? It's a dramedy.
It's a comedy. It's an edgy comedy. It's
Nick
a dark
Frost.
Comedy.
It's hilarious. Yeah. It's about him. He gets misdiagnosed with cancer and it's a hard kind of, it's like a comedy drama, dark comedy.
Yeah.
Kay absolutely ripped it to shreds.
I know.
Can I just say,
I was a bit grumpy last week.
You were.
I think that when I think back, I was a bit grumpy. However, when I pondered
all those days
tonight,
ago,
we'll take that as an apology.
No, but I do agree that I do think it was predictable. Anyway.
Oh. You're saying you're grumpy, but you still stand by it.
Here's the interesting,
maybe went on a bit.
Here's the interesting. Helen Linehan, who one of the writers, the four writers of Motherland, her brother is James Serafinowicz, the co-writer of...
Oh.
Oh, God.
Mind blown. What?
Yeah.
No, of Sick Note.
Yeah.
Oh, no. So do they hate Kay now? Yeah.
Well, I don't think they've listened to the podcast. I don't know.
Let's
We didn't get into it. But Helen was perfectly thought was perfectly right that we gave that her show 5 stars and Signe only 4 stars.
Well, I mean that is a priority.
Yeah. Okay. So there was that.
Yeah.
Everyone, watch out. Keep watching. By the way, Motherland is all on iPlayer.
It's
on. Well, no, it will be on today. I think. Yeah, Tuesday. Yeah. If you listen to it on Tuesday, it's a drop. It's an iPlayer drop.
Whole series is going to be available. What's the new word? Because we're not allowed to say drop now.
Arrive.
It's an arrive.
I'm not saying that.
I think BBC don't mind if you say
it's
drop. It's Netflix.
It's a dump. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
I don't let Netflix dictate what I say.
Not me neither.
No.
All 6 episodes of Motherland are available to watch now, and it's a brilliant series. The other, quickly, let me quickly say, I went to see Inside Number 9, which is one of my favourite of all things.
Oh.
It's such a brilliant show. It's the show, it's the anthology show. Every episode is different. Rhys Shearsmith and Steve Pemberton create it, write every single episode. There's 3 series so far. They've made the 4th. It's not going to be out till January, but they had a screening just before Halloween, classically timed at the BFI, for very special people.
Were you there?
I was there. And they showed.
You're very special.
Very special people and me.
Okay.
And they showed 2 new episodes, and they were so good. Like, one of them.
What's it about? Like,
is it a bit like
each
V?
Episode? No, it's not like Veep at all. Neither of you watched Inside Number 9.
No, but are you not getting that from our confused faces?
But I'm just furious that you go. So what you got to do? I think they're definitely available to watch somewhere, either iPlayer or Netflix or somewhere. Or I'll just lend you my DVDs. Okay. Anyway,
we'll lend it to
you, Boggs. So Rhys Shearsmith and Steve Pemberton of Leave a Gentleman fame. Obviously, they like their kind of dark, slightly warped, kind of almost horror comedy stuff. You know, like how.
Comedy. Okay, right.
So that one of the Inside Number 9 is every episode is a completely different story, and the only thing that links them is the fact that it's written by those two, and usually starring those two, but not always. And each one is its own self-contained story completely, and it's like like Black Mirror. It's like their own kind of weird, usually like. Often in the past, they've been quasi horror.
Is it funny? Silly.
Some of them are silly. Why does it sound silly?
I don't know. It just does.
You've taken against it already, which is outrageous.
Horror comedy, I don't think, is a thing that can happen. I think that's probably what it is.
Well, if you want proof that it can, watch Inside Number 9. That's what I'm saying. Anyway, but each one they do. So one was a silent episode, one of the very first ones. I think in the first, it was completely silent. Silent, like a silent film.
That's
no dialogue.
See, that is ridiculous.
Oh my God. I didn't realise you're so small-minded, Steph.
Why didn't you realise? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I'm beginning. I know.
What the hell?
That's
know.
My thing. That's her jam.
That's my thing. I like what I like. I don't like what I don't like.
Yeah, you're right. The last series, they did a whole episode which was people singing karaoke, and it was just people's karaoke song choices.
I'm going to level with you. It sounds terrible.
Oh, my God.
It does. I'm
so glad
watch
I brought it up.
It does.
When's it on?
I'm just going to talk to Kay now. I'm just going to talk to Kay. Kay understands how exciting this is. Anyway, in the 2 new episodes, one of them is written in Shakespearean iambic pentameter and rhyming couplets. How about that? And it's brilliant. It's all set in a hotel, and it's people, like a fast people going in and out, and it's set in the hotel corridor, and you see all the characters going in and out of the doors, and it's absolutely brilliant, absolutely phenomenal. Another one was told backwards, like Relic. Remember Relic?
Oh, God.
So this episode, this is the brilliant thing, right?
I'm out.
This episode,
I wasn't ever
half
in
hour
and
episode,
I'm out.
It's a kind of murder, kind of comedy thing, and it goes back 10 minutes. Each scene goes back 10 minutes previously, but it's a lot more easy to digest and understand than Relic. And someone asked them about Relic, and Rhys Shearsmith joked. Like, he said, "Yeah, the only difference is Relic was shit." He said, and everyone, I gasped. Yeah. And then he went, "I've watched it. I'm just joking, but it was funny."
Too late to backtrack now.
So that is my summary. But I mean, I wish we had time to go into Murder on the Orient Express because Kay and I did go and see it.
I'm going to ask John. Right, John, do they have time to go into Murder on the Orient Express? It's a thumbs up from John.
So
a silent thumbs up.
It is out now in cinemas. It is. I mean, we're both big Agatha Christie fans, Kay and I. Kay is obsessed with Poirot to the point where, we came out of this film. Here's my summary, and then Kay can say what her version of the argument was.
Yeah, I'll need to hear both sides, I'm afraid. Yeah.
So we'll talk about what we thought of it, and then Kay seized upon, like...
Well, let's just say what we thought about, not the... Like, we thought it was a beautiful, lavishly
filmed...
It's
brilliantly made.
So much star. I mean, God.
Visually spectacular.
Should we just say, for people that might not know, that this is obviously Agatha Christie's famous book, Murder on the Orient Express.
So most
famous...
Yeah, Ken Branagh directed it, starring
Penelope Cruz, Judy Dench, Michelle Pfeiffer, Johnny Depp, William Dafoe, Olivia Colman, all these people.
Okay. And it's been filmed. There was a 1974 version, very famous, starring Albert Finney as Poirot, yeah, directed by Sidney Lumet, that I love. There was a Poirot starring your hero,
David Suchet,
that version on
Poirot.
ITV a few years ago. Mm. The kind of unique selling point of this version is it's a visual spectacular. So even though really it's about what 12, 13 characters on a train being interrogated by Poirot, they've turned into this huge lavish thing with an avalanche and people fighting outside and him walking on the train, okay, controversially, according to Kate. So it's definitely the most spectacular version so far. My feeling about the film as a whole, I really enjoyed it. I think we both enjoyed it, didn't we? So this is going to sound probably more critical in a minute or two. I felt it was a bit rushed, like from when the murder happens to the solution, it was a bit rushed. But I did think that it was incredibly entertaining and I really enjoyed it. But that was my main critique of it.
Say what you got to say, Kay.
Okay, so when we came out of the cinema, Boyd was like, what did you think of Poirot? And I went into it knowing that I would probably take against him because it wasn't David Suchet, who is my favourite Poirot.
Well, he is Poirot.
He is Poirot, right? And then I was giving my reasons to Boyd. And I mean, he, by the end of our conversation, was making me feel like I was a lunatic.
Can I
right?
hear your reasons?
Okay. One. Anyone who's read the book in detail or has watched the show knows that the whole thing about Poirot is that he's very fastidious about the way he talks, the way he looks. You know, he's very particular, very measured. Everything has to be just so. So in the film, they made a real point of a couple of times at the beginning, really setting out the stall of like, oh, you know, he measured that his eggs were the same height and da-da-da, to kind of like adhere to that quality. But my problem was that throughout, from the beginning, he should have been like that throughout.
It should have been consistent. So that is lazy.
That is what Poirot's like, right? Yeah. So my thing was, I brought up the fact that in the first scene, Poirot had this waistcoat on that was the wrong size for him, was rumpled, and later on his tie was askew. He would never be like that, right? And the way he was talking, and like he wasn't a very jovial character usually. You know, he's very like measured and particular, and he just wasn't like that in so many different ways.
Yep.
Like there was a bit where he was talking to Johnny Depp and they were having dessert and something, and like he just grabbed a spoon and started sharing Johnny Depp's dessert. He
wouldn't. Right. It's a duff now.
First of all,
he wouldn't do.
Let's
he wouldn't
be accurate.
Share
let's have an accurate recollection. Of
okay,
scene.
Go on.
Johnny Depp sits. Johnny Depp's gangster character offers Poirot some of his dessert. The whole thing is built around. It's like a mousse. Looks like a kind of chocolate mousse type
that's
thing.
That's by the by.
Depp's character says, "Sit me down, and you can have some of my dessert." And Branagh consents. So he wants to have this meeting that he will have some dessert, and
he
orders gets his own spoon. That was a slight miss.
He would never share a dessert.
Well, it's a slight unbiased telling of that. We can establish that.
Why
but you
is
claim
there not
that he
enough
suddenly
dessert for other people?
And what I'm saying is, let's just have accuracy. Kate did try and claim that he suddenly started eating the dessert, shoving his face in it. That didn't happen. Here's my point about this is my intrigue. I was intrigued by Kay's critique of the ruffled waistcoat and the askew tie. So Kay was saying, what I couldn't get past.
He didn't have a top hat as well, by the way.
What I couldn't get past was Kay was critiquing the film, saying they take too many liberties from the usual character because he wasn't fastidious enough and perfect enough. And what I'm saying in the script, it makes it quite clear that he is obsessively fastidious, because it opens with him with the whole thing about his eggs being the right size. He talks to, there's dialogue about where he talks to someone else about not having their bow tie straight twice in the film, and it makes it quite clear that fastidiousness is his thing. The waistcoat was too small and it was creased.
Rumpled his tie.
That's a critique of the costume person.
No,
whose job
not.
It is to make sure. It's not in the script. Doesn't say in the script say.
Yeah. Yeah,
does the script say, let me finish, Poirot's tie is askew, his waistcoat's too small?
Stop.
That's
look,
a technical point.
Stop the madness.
Who is directing this, though? Someone surely is checking this stuff.
Right.
The costume designer just allowed to
Kenneth
do where
Branagh
he wants,
directed.
He
the irony is Kenneth Branagh directed himself as Poirot and he didn't notice the ruffles.
He should have straightened his effing tie, is all I'm
just,
saying.
I'm with Kay on continuity.
It's a consistency of a character. If the character is very particular, very fussy, he's not going to be like this.
This film is absolutely ruined by a bow tie and a waistcoat.
Stephanie,
so nice try, Branagh. But it's over.
Do not even get me started on his moustache. Anyway, let's move on.
I've seen a picture of that moustache.
It's comical.
It's not right.
It's comical.
It's thick. It's not right.
Don't get me wrong. If it's true that the tie is askew and it's not, that
and
is
the
a
way
critique
he talks,
of that is a critique of
around.
The that's a critique of the continuity and the costume people. But it's not a critique of the script.
Why
the
can I ask? David Suchet, why don't they, is David Suchet past?
No, he's very present. Okay,
fine. Like, quick David Suchet alive check.
And I've just found out David, he's on Twitter, by the way.
David Suchet.
Why didn't they just get David Suchet to do it?
Well, then it would have been like the film version of the ITV series.
Well, but what's wrong with that? Jesus,
and I have to say, this could actually be, I know it's very cinematic and stuff, but you could actually watch this on TV.
Do you know
TV.
What? That was going to be my question. Mm. Is it one of those things that actually you could watch on TV?
I think so, at Christmas time. Definitely.
That rustling you can hear is Boyd rustling the Kinder Egg that I provided him with. Are we allowed to say Kinder Egg?
Yeah, we've already said apple and a load of other stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think we're going to get sued.
No, but we might get some free Kinder
Eggs. We're not the BBC. Oh, yes. We don't have to mention Kinder every eggs. Other confectionery maker. It's fine. In fact, if anything, they'll probably be happy, I imagine. Because Kinder Eggs are delicious. as was the visual spectacle. I actually think... The whole point of this, funny enough, the whole point of this version of Murder, the last thing I'm going to say about it, Murder on the Orient Express, is that you're supposed to go and see it in the bloody cinema because it is the most visually spectacular version ever, and that's the whole point, anyway. But we'll
it's three stars from me.
Look, the rating hangs on a waistcoat, and unfortunately, that waistcoat is ruffled.
Do you know what? I'm going to see. I was going to go and see it again.
It's not just
check
the waistcoat.
The ruffle.
It's the way he talks. It's the way he walks.
Yeah.
It's the way he dresses.
Boyd, or you
it's
about
his behaviour.
Oh,
he doesn't adhere to the
so
characteristics
many,
and traits of Hercule Poirot.
I've got so many creases in my waistcoat. Okay. Anyway, let's get on to the meat of the show. Okay, seething. Furious.
No, because can I just say, as a last point, right?
Okay, one last point, and then we must absolutely move on. I hate to be you.
I would say is, if someone asks you a question and your opinion on something, as Boyd did after this screening, right, when I give him a long answer, a 40-minute journey, he can't roll his eyes and say, I'm a maniac.
Okay. And that is the end of it, okay? That is it. Boyd, I can see you want to say something, but
no,
I'm afraid
let's
we're
going
to
get on the
I'm very happy to leave it there.
Okay.
Meet.
Sums
come
it
on,
up.
Let's go.
Let's talk about three BBC dramas. It's a BBC drama special, I've just realised. It's not even just a TV drama special. It's like we planned it. It's a celebration of all the new dramas that are starting next week on the BBC. And I thought we'd start with an oldie and a goodie and a favourite. Peaky Blinders.
The Peaky Blinders.
Listeners, Steph is literally rubbing her hands with glee. So you can tell us where we are in Peaky Blinder world and what happens in this first episode of season four and what you think of it.
Okay. So for people who haven't watched Peaky Blinders, I think this is the fourth season of Peaky Blinders. Peaky Blinders is all about the Shelby family, who are a family of wrong-uns. They've got illegal gambling, they're always killing people. It's just everything horrendous. Now, what is the time it's set in, Boyd? It's
kind of 20s.
20s, okay. Right, so the lead Peaky Blinder, Thomas Shelby, is played by Cillian Murphy.
Cillian?
Oh,
Killian. Surely Cillian.
I say Cillian.
Oh, well, I think
of what he likes to do as a character, kill.
Is it Cillian?
I think he's Irish. Sorry. I mean, who knows? But it's an interesting point. When we'll
sorry, Irish people, if it
let's call Cillian Cillian.
You may be right. Cillian
no,
Cillian.
No, I don't think
call
I am
Cillian.
Now.
No, Cillian Cillian.
Cillian Cillian. Cillian yep. Cillian Murphy, yeah.
Okay, he plays... Yeah, so basically he's the head of the family. Okay, set in Birmingham, so they've all got the perfect Birmingham accent. It's also got Helen McCrory in it as his sister.
Fantastic.
And she is so brilliant. Okay, so they've been through loads... I'm not going to go through everything that's ever happened to them, but they've been through lots of trials and tribulations. But this series starts in the first scene, so I'm not spoiling anything. Tommy, okay, says to them, is laying out money and says to them, you know, you're all going to get arrested. There's warrants out for your arrest. And then they all get sent to prison. Kay's looking at me like I've spoiled something.
No, not at all.
So they all get sent to prison, and then obviously they're all very, very unhappy with Thomas Shelby. And then it fast forwards to a year, and then it starts from there, where each family member gets a letter in the post, which is a black hand, which means the mafia are after them, okay? Mm. And if you're a fan of this show, you'll know that they killed a member of an Italian mafia family. And the amazing thing about this series, which has obviously also had Tom, what's his face?
Hardy
in it. This series has got Adrian Brody in it, and he is the mafioso, and it is going to be amazing.
It's all going to go off.
It is all going to go off.
Now, you're clearly a Peaky fan, even though you can't
Peaky
pronounce
fan.
Cillian Cillian Murphy's name properly.
Silkill.
It's fine.
Got
Silkill.
It.
Mr. Murphy.
Can you a Peaky fan? I've got the sense that you're a virgin.
Are you? Demi-virgin.
Oh.
Because I've watched two episodes when I was on a judging panel, and that's all I've watched.
Of which series?
Panel. One of them.
One of the series. Two episodes of one of the series.
I did enjoy it, but I haven't got round to catching up.
Okay.
So what did we think of this return? What did you think?
I thought it was an amazing.
As the fan.
The whole episode, the ending is just
insane. Don't
I'm not
going to
say
refer.
No, I'm just going to say the ending is insane. But also, and it's all the way through, it's just, oh God, it's just hit after hit of like scary tension. And that Helen McCrory, do you know what? That woman just gets better and better. This her character in that is just. Polly is the name of the sister. She just gets, oh, she's brilliant, and she's gone a little bit mad, and it's just perfect. I love the whole thing. Obviously, Annabelle Wallis, who played Thomas Shelby's love interest, who sadly passed away, not in real life, in the series, and so he's still got his little, boy, and he's obviously very depressed and sad. So they're all scattered. The family are all scattered, but they've got to come back together. And that is what you're going to see in this first episode.
No guest appearance by John Bishop this time, with as Helen McCrory's photojournalist husband.
Hey, Boyd, what other dramatic roles has John Bishop played since that role in that series that I can't remember the name of? None. Do you know why? Because he wasn't very good at it.
This is probably on a half, 200,
back off
200 date stand-up tour, I imagine.
Yeah, because he's excellent at that.
Kay, how did this measure up to the two previous mystery episodes you watched?
I was just going to say, as well as the ending... So I said that Gunpowder had the best, most tense intro, like 5-6 minute intro to a series that I've ever seen. And actually, I think this one is even more tense. I think this is like, I won't say what happens, but...
We can say what happens in the opening, I think.
No.
Really?
No, don't say
it's too much of a... No.
Okay, well, we can say that all the members of this family are kind of in
peril.
Jeopardy, aren't they? Yeah. High jeopardy, and how that's...
Very high jeopardy.
Very clever, yeah. It's like one... I thought what was very... What I think is very most impressive about Peaky Blinders, and it's Stephen Knight, I think, is the creator and writer of most of it, if not all of it, is that he makes it very... each episode is like a little film. It's like an hour-long film to me, like a really clever, intense. And this one is like... it's like that bit in The Godfather. You know in The Godfather where everyone is going to be attacked and you know it's going to happen.
And they're all,
everything's gathering. It's that sense of...
The quiet before the storm.
Before the storm. And the build-up is so brilliantly done. And you're working out what's Tommy going to do? How's he going to sort it out? And there are twists. There's a couple of brilliant twists.
Peaky Blinders is... Twist-tastic. It is so clever at that.
So the build-up was brilliantly tense.
It's a bit like the Agatha Christie and then there were none, waiting for them to be picked off one by one.
Yeah, it is a little bit like that, yeah.
Sorry, just bring it back.
Yeah, always bring it back to Christie, always.
Always. Crystal Maze.
So I just thought it was... It's just a really object lesson in an hour-long bit of TV. Tense. Yeah. The characters, we know the characters so well now after four series and they're all kind of behaving in the way you expect and yet sometimes they just divert. Helen McCrory's character, you say, is one, it's just
fascinating. The development of that character
Polly.
Is amazing. Yeah.
And the ending, as you say, no spoilers, but is so dramatic and it will leave you reeling. Kay?
Question. Now, is Helen McCrory's character having a breakdown and why did she hate Tommy?
Okay, so they all hate Tommy because in the beginning of this episode, he gives them all up.
He betrays them. At the end of last series, he betrayed them.
What, to get his OBE?
Well, no, it's complicated.
It's incredibly complicated.
I'll watch
it, don't worry. But he betrays them for a reason.
Okay.
Getting the OBE is just a sideline.
Yeah.
Can I just say,
you know I hate scary things, violence.
I thought you'd hate this.
No, but when it comes in the form of Silkill, I'm into it.
Oh, yeah.
If he's committing the violence, those blue eyes and those chiseled cheeks, I'm into it.
Yeah.
In a big way.
Absolutely. I think we're all very excited and very happy with the turn of Peaky Blinders. Yeah. How many stars are we going to give it, Steph Seelan?
For me, this is 5-star. I love Peaky Blinders.
Kay Ribeiro.
5 stars.
5 stars for me.
It's a triple five.
It's a rare, very rare triple agreeance.
It is a triple agreeance.
We may have fallen out about Hercule Poirot's waistcoat, but we're all agreeing.
It's not about the waistcoat, boys.
We're all agreeing about Peaky Blinders. Let's move on. So Peaky Blinders, let me remind you, begins on the BBC Two television next Wednesday, the 15th of November at 9 of the PM.
I don't understand this scheduling. Why is it on Wednesday?
What does that matter?
Because it's a Saturday night. It's so good.
It's not Saturday night, you lunatic.
I don't think it should be a Saturday.
This is someone who her whole life is watching Netflix. You have no idea when things are. It's always a midweek show.
I'm going to be totally honest and say that is absolutely true. I am watching Netflix, so I have no concept of scheduling.
No concept of it. It's never been on Saturday night in its entire life of four series.
Anyway, so Wednesday, what a good day to
have on. Yeah, it's brilliant. Let us move on. I sound like a bit like a vicar there, didn't I? Let us pray.
Let us pray.
The Boy with a Top Knot is a 90-minute one-off drama. It's based on the book of memoirs by a journalist, Satnam Sangera, who was a journalist at the Times, and he wrote this book about what it was like being born to traditional Punjabi parents growing up in Wolverhampton. And then, you know, he went to Cambridge, became a very successful journalist, doing big interviews with the likes of Simon Cowell for the Times. And he wrote this memoir. And I remember, I read this book, and I remember we considered it for the South Bank Awards, and it was, you know, I think it might have even been nominated, I can't remember. And I remember thinking, God, I should dredge up something in my life and turn it into a book. You know, I'm a journalist. I interview Simon Cowell. But his book is so good. Have you read the book?
No. Oh. And I watched this and I immediately went onto Amazon because I was like, I think I need to read this.
It's so well written. And it was I could never do a book as good as this. So,
You could, Boyd.
But it is interesting that it's one of the most interesting things. And then they've turned it into this 90-minute one-off drama. And it's very interesting for me, like, to see a thing where it shows him as a journalist, kind of as a grown-up journalist in the present day, and he's been commissioned to write interviews with Simon Cowell and you see him in his office. It's kind of weird, isn't it? It's almost that is the closest to what we do.
Only we don't get to drive Ferraris.
Right, well, yeah, he gets to drive Ferraris.
He's got some nice wheels.
Simon Cowell. So almost that was one fascinating thing. It's about someone. It could be one of us. This could be one of us.
Full disclosure, I had no idea this was a true story.
Really?
No, I was like, this is just really That's good.
That's brilliant. So, you know, if one of us comes up with a book of memoirs that gets turned into a 90-minute film, if you Simon, we could be reviewing that here now. Anyway.
Oh, my God, do you know what? I just want to say I would do that, something autobiographical. And do you know who I'd get to play Boyd?
Who?
David Suchet. Right.
Oh, my God. I'm going to do one, and I'm going to call it Why I Don't Like Ricky Whittle. That's what it's going to be called.
But you wouldn't get him to play Ricky Whittle.
It's quite an eye-catching title for the book. Yeah. Okay. You could have Whittle appearing as like a figure in the book. Like in this book, his younger self with the top knot
appears
throughout. And
topless,
sort of vision.
As is his favourite mode of being.
Visions of Whittle. That could be great. That could turn out really well. Yes. Okay. So, Kate, so what did you think of this? I mean, you could set up more than I've set up a bit.
I really like this.
Spoiler alert.
I thought we're giving our verdicts. No, I really enjoyed this because I think I could relate to it a lot because it's about second generation Asian and the two different worlds. You know, obviously his family's very traditional.
Explain that you are an Asian.
Also relate. I mean, if people can't understand, I'm saying I relate to it. And if they think I'm English.
I don't know.
I am brown.
Yeah.
Listeners, so I very much am brown. Indian parents. But unlike his parents, so mine are Catholic, non-traditional, as in they're very like liberal. My sister's married to a white man, unlike him, who, you know, every one of his cousins is, I think he says he's got 54 first cousins that are all married to Sikh women, and that's what his mum wants him to do. She's very traditional. She wants him to have an arranged marriage and she keeps on, it's hilarious because she keeps on saying, I've got this lovely girl, and she'll compare her to like Cheryl Cole or she looks like Kylie Minogue and stuff. But he is very resistant because obviously he's found this, you know, he's created this new life for himself. He's top of his game. He's a bit egotist, you know, he's always going on about getting a first at Cambridge. And like he's living these two different lives, these two different worlds. And what's interesting is that you can do that up to a point, but then inevitably they have to collide. And it collides because he's got an English fiancé. And it's come to the moment where he needs to tell his parents. And so he goes to Wolverhampton to tell them he feels sick because he thinks he's going to be disowned. And when he gets there, he unwittingly discovers that his father's got a mental health issue. And then he kind of goes to an appointment and he realises that any kind of stress or shock could just set him off because he has schizophrenia. And, you know, so then he's in this position where he can't tell them the truth. He's stuck between a rock and a hard place because he wants to tell them. His fiance really wants him to tell them, but he also doesn't want to, like, for his father's health to deteriorate. And I just found it really interesting. But also, I've got to say, the observations, the cultural observations are brilliant. So I can say, confirm that there's two things that really stood out. How he did something to upset his mum, and his aunt in India knew about it before he did. Right, because the mum had called her in India. I can confirm that does happen.
With Auntie Lorna, Auntie Lorna.
Absolutely.
Mm, she's naming names.
Yeah, well.
I've got to call her out.
I'm going to tell you one more thing as well, because I know, I'm very confident my mum won't listen to this and for her insanity to be exposed. Right? There's a scene in this where basically he goes back to his parents' home. They're going to India and he goes through this. He's weighing their suitcases, which are so incredibly heavy, which is what always happens because they pack it full of shit. And so he opens it up and there's like random objects in there. In this case, 4 coconuts, right? Now, my mum has never packed coconuts, but the kind of crap she puts in the suitcase, they are so heavy, they can't physically be lifted. And one time,
Oh, God.
Yeah, my sister and her now husband, Chris, went to Goa. They're going on holiday. Mum sent some stuff back, right? Obviously, all the stuff they could get there. Plus, an additional item, which was a blowtorch, right? Now,
Mum, listen to
a
this.
A blowtorch yeah. to Goa.
So, yeah,
well, to Bombay. So my sister, who I've got to say, disclaimer, she's a very intelligent woman, right? And my brother-in-law as well, he's a member of the police, right? So he's got...
He's a member of the police. That club.
Yeah, yeah, that club of intelligent people. Yeah. Law-abiding citizens. Yeah. So they did this because obviously you can't, you know, reason with a mad woman.
Yeah.
Rightfully so, got stopped. And their reasoning, they had to say, her reason, she sent it to help my aunt, Auntie Lorna, with her creme brulee.
Kay, you've got to write a memoir called The Girl with a Blowtorch. It's got to happen. So, I want this to be commissioned and written yeah. and starring.
Yeah, not blow torches in Bombay.
But why would you send it?
Oh, I don't know.
God, anyway, so it just, you know, yes. there's a lot of cultural observations.
Absolutely, and the book is full of one incredibly funny. Obviously, the drama, one of the great things about this for me is that it's distilled. The book has a lot about those cultural things that happened to him when he was a yeah. boy and is growing up, and that's still happening now when he goes back to see the family. And they're brilliantly observed, and they're very funny.
They're hilarious.
Whilst also weaving in the revelations about the mental health issues of his family.
It's bittersweet.
Yeah, oh, it's completely bittersweet. Yeah, but I thought this 90-minute drama very cleverly let the cultural observations that are very funny happen, kind of almost in the background, like the suitcase scene, which was very funny, as you say. But then when the revelations about the family's mental health issues come, and because he doesn't know. One of the great ideas about it is his job is to interview famous people, mostly who he doesn't know, and find out about their lives. He's never done that with his own family. And one of the great things that you're reminded of constantly in this drama is he's literally ends up having to interview members of his family, his mum, his aunt, his dad, and his sister, like he does Simon Cowell, just to get the realization in him that he's having to do this to finally understand what the family and what made them tick and what's happened to them in the past is so. I found it so moving.
I thought it was incredible. I found this really emotional to watch because the fact is, what he'd done is he kind of put certain members of his family in boxes and decided that's what they are. That's what my dad's like this, my mum's like this, my sister and brother, they're this way, my cousins are this way, and I'm the person who's gone off, had a career, gone to Cambridge. Like that was his, like you said, that's kind of his opening gambit to everything. Thing. Oh, I got a first from Cambridge, and that he had gone, moved away from the family, trying to just was happy with what they were, and that he'd made this life for himself. But now he kind of, it's this very emotional journey of stumbling to reinsert himself into his family life through wanting to tell them something about his new life and actually discovering more about his own family. And I found it so beautifully done. It's like another one of these dramas that it's just been so well put together and makes you think without you realising you're thinking, if you know.
You know, I've realised, Kay's about to say, she really wants to say something. We haven't mentioned the fact that Sacha Dhawan plays Satnam Sundgera. Sacha Dhawan, who was in The History Boys, he was in Sherlock last series. He's
brilliant. Was in the ISIS drama as well.
He was
wasn't
in the
he?
ISIS drama. He's fantastic and he is brilliant as Satnam Sundgera.
And who plays his girlfriend?
He's a real person, by the way. His girlfriend is played by Joanna Vanderham.
She
also
was very good.
Absolutely brilliant. They both make, I think, quite hard to make, like journalists. She's a journalist as well. In this, especially us, we are journalists, three of us. I found it completely believable, like their portrayal of themselves, and that I thought that's a hard thing to get right. And Kay's champing at the bit.
No, only I wanted to tell you that Geeta from EastEnders was in it, which I was really excited about.
She is the auntie, yeah. And Deepti Naval plays Satnam's mother, and Anupam Kerr.
Isn't she great?
Fantastic. The mum is so good.
I can't believe the mother was mother with a star for me. I thought she just played it. Perfectly.
The mother brought me to tears because she's such a stoic Asian mother who's had to endure so much. And there's this end part where there's this great scene where he tells her in a way of what's happening. And just like as you're watching her taking that news, I couldn't stop crying. I was like,
It's fantastic. I have a slight fear that it might be another Full House because I'm giving it five effing stars.
Yeah, so
I don't care what you two think.
Yeah, you must.
Me too.
Watch it.
Five stars.
But I mean, I'm not going to let it interrupt my five starness.
No.
Kay's giving it five stars.
I'm going to give it
Stephanie's
five too.
Stephanie's seen that we're all. So the boy with the top knot. I'm not sure if this has ever happened. We've had two things with the full
really
three
drama.
Quality
five
drama.
Star treatment. And it's on next Monday on BBC Two at 9 o'clock. Do not miss it. That's why we call it the Unmissables.
Yeah, you shouldn't miss it.
Finally, next Sunday, even the Sunday night period drama slot, is taken over by a new four-part version of the classic Ian Forster novel, Howard's End, which was a film. Do you remember, has anyone seen the film with Tony Hopkins?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, Helena Bonham Carter. Yeah, I mean, you know, it was a good film.
What
Merchant Ivory film. Yeah, yeah.
I love a bit of Merchant Ivory.
Yeah, Emmett Thompson. I mean, you know, does it get better
Big
than
names.
That? But now, and that was a long time ago now.
It doesn't.
Now it's back in this new four-part version. And I have to say, the credentials of this are pretty damn good. It's written, it's adapted by Kenneth Lonergan. He's an actual proper Hollywood writer-director. He did Manchester by the Sea. And I think he won the Oscar for Best Screenplay.
He won the Oscar for Best Screenplay. Yes. Casey won for Best Actor. Yes. Manchester by the Sea, the most
brilliantly
depressing film you'll ever see.
Yeah. He has adapted...
Sign me up.
It's depressing the whole way through.
He has adapted... I'm going to get it out. This screenplay of Howard's End, and it's directed by Hetty MacDonald, who is a BAFTA-winning director, and she's very good and done loads of good stuff. It stars Hayley Atwell, the brilliant Hayley Atwell, as Margaret Schlegel, who is... she's a kind of idealistic young woman courted by an older guy called Henry Wilcox, played by Matthew McFadden, who's the kind of patriarch of this family, quite wealthy family. He's a self-made businessman. And his wife, played by Julie Ormond.
Oh, welcome back, Julie Ormond, to the screen.
Yes, very exciting. Dies unexpected. And he becomes the owner of this big house called Howard's End. So if you're wondering Howard's End, the title is about, it's kind of like Brideshead, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, Brideshead was the name of this big, huge, big place that the whole story revolved around. This time it revolves around this house, Howard's End. And meanwhile, Margaret's younger sister, Helen Schlegel, played by Philippa Coulthard, she meets this guy called Leonard, played by Joseph Quinn, who's a young bank clerk, who's like lower middle class. This is all about class. So these are these posh people, and these are kind of lower middle class. And it's, you know, Abe from his whole look and his whole manner is kind of quite, something quite not quite right about him. He's not very confident in himself. He has issues. And at one point, the posh sister remarks about his umbrella not being a good enough umbrella, saying it's a kind of whatever the line of dialogue is. And he's embarrassed and he has to scuttle away with his not particularly posh umbrella. So it's all about kind of cross-class romance and conflict. And what did we think of Howard's End?
Well, I love a bit of narration, I have to say. No, it's true. I do. I can get on board with things. And it's narrated the whole way through. It's narrated by the Helen character, right?
Yep.
That's her. Yes, I thought it was very, you know, I mean, I love a period drama. And I love Julie Ormond. And obviously, sadly, she's not with us for too long. But, yeah, I just thought, again, it was a really great drama. I mean, I do have to say I do love the film. I thought this was just as good. I think everyone's going to want to watch this on Sunday nights.
Of course, yeah. Sunday night, BBC One, 9 o'clock.
Brilliant. Matthew McFadden, obviously, he's well-versed in doing period dramas. Costumes are great. Everything's great. Really, really well acted. Let's just say, though, the thing that I found the most shocking was that Tracy Ullman is in this.
So I didn't even mention
you adjust
that.
Your,
sorry.
Adjust your vision. Because yes. I have to say, obviously, Tracy Ullman, an incredibly famous comic. What I did have to do was kind of, because it's really hard, because she's obviously a great character actress. And
yeah.
So it took me a little while, I have to say, to get used to her being in it and then not her not saying a funny line afterwards. That's my only slight gripe with it.
She plays the aunt, interfering aunt, who kind of looks over the sisters and their brother, also young brother Tibby, played by Alex Lawther, who was in that, you know, that effing youth drama series we reviewed a couple of weeks ago on Channel 4. Yeah, he's in that. Alex Lawther, yeah, he's the psychopath guy in that, yeah.
sorry.
Taken aback by the Alice or the casting news.
No, because I was going to tell you that what's his chops? Joseph Quinn, who's Leonard Bast, was also in Time Wasters.
Yes,
we did recently.
Yes.
He was the Lord in that, and he was in Dickensian, which I really loved. Do you remember he was Arthur Havisham?
Yeah, yeah. I don't. Everyone was in Dickensian, weren't they?
I mean, yeah, pretty much all the names, all the greats. I really liked. I really liked Aunt Julia's. Played by Tracy Ullman, because she reminded me of, and I forgot that Room with a View was also written by Ian Forster, which is one I actually prefer. A Room with a View,
dear.
And she reminded me of Aunt Lucy, played by Maggie Smith, in that kind of role. Thought it was a really good drama. It's not my favourite of his books. I read it coincidentally at the beginning of the year. Do you remember? And I said it to you at the time.
Oh,
you said it was one of your preferred Ian Forster books, and I was like,
No, I love it.
I got through it more than enjoyed.
It is interesting.
The book.
It is interesting because the story itself, when I was reading, describing it, I suddenly thought, halfway through describing the story, I was thinking, it doesn't sound like a gripping narrative. Do you know what I mean? And one of the interesting things about the book is, and clearly you found this, the story itself, because it's kind of about people. It's a
social commentary.
It's a social commentary, yeah. And it's almost like the romances develop almost by the by, and the dramas happen. You know, small incidents. It's all about, and a lot of the influencer stuff is like this.
Yeah.
It's all about tiny little moments, like the umbrella, the woman taking the wrong umbrella, and, you know, that his umbrella gets taken by her when they go to a concert by mistake, and the implications of that. It's all about tiny little interactions, and it's, so it's all about the detail, really, is what I'm trying to
say. I think that, for me, was probably... I liked it,
yeah.
But I think I'm very used to there being, like, big things that happen, big...
This was a scene-setting episode, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, and it was just kind of like a, you know, like a, just kind of like a small, yeah, slow-moving but very nice train.
I wonder if, like, because in the book, Leonard is more... I wonder if they're going to develop him, obviously, much more in the second episode, because
totally, yeah,
they just kind of, like, it was, he was briefly touched upon, I feel.
Well, that, he was. He would definitely come to the fore in future episodes, because it kind of ends up being all about him to some extent, the story, I think. But I was, when they first announced this, it's a four-parter, and I was surprised that they were doing four parts. That's 4 hours. I was thinking, that's interesting, because the story is quite, and the story itself is quite slow moving in a way. And but it's very, I thought it was very, if you're a fan of the book like I am, I thought it was a really well cast and well written and beautifully directed version of the book. But I would just caution people, it isn't the fastest moving. You know, when we used to, I mean, even that crime period drama that's been on Sunday nights that we reviewed on the show with the army people, those names I've forgotten. Thank you, The Last Post. You know, that is full of incident and moves very quickly. This is a different, totally different pace. I still think it's really good, but just in case people, you know, think they're getting something dazzlingly thrilling, it's
so
not like that.
I suppose you don't have to pay complete attention to it. Cause, like, you're not going to miss anything if you, do you know, I suppose, do you know what I mean? Like, you don't really miss anything.
Won't go that far.
Well, you don't really, do you? Like, you could go make
you
up tea
and come
back.
You could do the ironing and go make up tea.
You don't, it's not like something you have to absolutely have to pay really close attention to. It is that slow moving, Boyd. It really is.
Oh, okay. Well, I think you probably... I'm not going to countenance not paying attention to it, I'm afraid. I'm
okay, pay attention.
But, you know,
okay,
I hear what you're saying.
Glacial speed.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, glacial.
It is glacial.
She's used the G word.
It's glacial, but it's like people who love Downton and things like that will like it, won't they? Because it's all period dramas and like stuff like that. Well, you know.
It's no Downton.
It's no,
Downton
no,
was a soap. This is a very, very much
Downton
a kind of...
Downton was a soap?
Of course it was. Downton's a soap opera. It was a period drama soap opera. It was
that.
The soapiest period drama ever. This is a class above.
Okay.
I think. Anyway, I'm giving it 4 or 4.5 stars.
Which one? 4 or 4.5?
Yeah.
Four. Yeah, I knew you were going to... Four.
It's a 3 for me.
Well...
I'm sorry, can I adjust mine? Because I got scared that I was going to get in trouble for the unit 4. I would say it's 3.5.
Never live in fear with your scoring.
When you say get in trouble, what do you think is going to happen?
I mean, boy's going to take you out and beat
you.
Someone...
In this day and age, don't say that. People won't take it seriously.
He has never beat me to date.
Boy, please don't beat me again. No. Let's no, just... I just was worried I didn't want to offend your love of the book. But it is 100% a 3.5.
While we're just clearing stuff up that Boyd doesn't beat us, can I just quickly say also that my mum is coming back from India and I don't want any customs officials to check her bags because she won't be carrying anything dangerous, I'm sure, and I need her to come back.
Okay, thanks. She won't be bringing you back a black
I have to horse. Say, when we first started this podcast about 8 hours ago, I was not expecting a message to customs officials to be...
Well, we're policymakers, officials.
Policymakers in your face.
It's just like... Oh, my God. It's just like Alec Baldwin all over again. The policymakers. Well, that is the meat of the show over with. And it's now...
Question time.
And for this week, in honour of the return of classic period gangster drama Peaky Blinders, what, pray tell, is your favourite television or film, or you could even do a book, I mean, I've just added
come
that
on.
Now.
Ooh. One book a year, Boyd, come on.
Depiction of gangsters. You know what I'm saying, Steph?
I know what you're
God.
Saying.
The way you say gangster and you know what I'm saying, he's going to take you out.
I am looking at you.
Okay. I'm going to say Martin Scorsese's The Departed, which is one of my all-time favourite films. Scorsese won an Oscar, and it was richly deserved for The Departed, which is an incredible film featuring Matt Damon and Leonardo DiCaprio.
The interesting thing about that is, and I love The Departed as well, but one of the things that people said about that is that he should have won the Oscar before for other films,
oh, gosh,
like
yeah.
Goodfellas, for
yeah,
example.
Course.
A lot of people say Goodfellas is better. Casino, another great gangster film that he did. Mean Streets, people say these are better than
Departed.
That.
I think if The Departed had come first, everyone would say The Departed was better. The Departed is an absolutely wonderful film.
Steph doth stand alone.
I doth stand alone, as ever, and that's fine. I'm an island.
No,
an island of my own opinion.
K-Rib.
Well, as you know, I probably haven't I haven't watched a lot of gangster movies, so I'm going with Boardwalk Empire.
Well, let's go with Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah, because that's what it's
Broadwalk
called.
Boardwalk Empire was
as you'll
the
know as a fan.
Little known sequel in which Broadwalk... What is Broadwalk?
It's not, it doesn't exist.
No. Whereas Boardwalk Empire, all about the Boardwalk in
A Broadwalk is not a thing.
No, it's fine.
But you love
collapsed.
It, yeah?
Kay's collapsed into a fit into
what
a...
Do you like about, what do you like about it?
I tell you why I've just collapsed, right? Because I always get that title wrong. So I actually wrote it down on my paper just to make sure I got it right. But I've written it as Broadwalk.
And if you think we're re-recording this, so we get the title right, we are not.
I know what you're thinking of. Broadchurch.
Yeah, exactly.
Broadchurch Walk Empire.
Totally different thing.
Thanks for the save, Steph. Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. Boardwalk, I'm just crossing it, right. Yeah, Empire. And because I love Michael Pitt. And
Michael Pitt is great. Thank you. Broadwalk Empire
hey, Boyd.
Is great.
Boyd, yes? I mean, I just want you to let you know that Broadwalk Empire is taken.
Okay,
so
I'm not
going to
pick that. I'm not going to pick that.
I mean, we don't pick it because it's not a thing.
When I actually make that, you're going to be feeling really
Oh my God, do you know what Broadwalk Empire is? It's the new Frasier. That's what it is.
That is
the Frasier of this episode.
She's trying. It's not.
No, it is.
Frasier, you mean the new
when you Motherland is the British
she compared,
Frasier.
For anyone who didn't listen last week, she compared Motherland to
Frasier. Maverick. I think, for me, I'm torn between my two... Scarface, the Brian De Palma version, and because I'm a huge fan of Brian De Palma.
Yeah.
So I've already gone on about it before.
Yeah,
on this
is the second week of you talking about
Brian
De Palma.
And obviously Scarface is absolutely incredible piece of filmmaking. I love it. And watch it every 6 months. And
religiously.
And,
where
and
are
they've
you
just
in the
had
6 months?
They've just had a brilliant collab with Supreme, of course, so you can get, you know, a Supreme Scarface t shirt.
This is merch drop.
But I'm not gonna pick
bone drop.
Yeah.
So many drops.
But I have to pick one of the greatest films of all time in any genre, The Godfather Part 2. I mean, the whole Godfather saga is incredible, but The Godfather Part 2 is one of the best five probably films ever made and is extraordinary and brilliant. And it features the great, one of my favourite scenes in all of cinema, Al Pacino and Diane Keaton, when they're talking about the fact that Diane Keaton has aborted her baby. And it is one of the all-time great scenes.
Very
in film
grim
history.
Way to end.
Well, it's not real. It's a drama. It happened, and the film came out in 1975. So I think it's fine. But thank you very much. That is it for this week's podcast. Stephanie Seelan.
Hey.
And Kay Ribeiro.
Why don't we tell people how to rate and review us?
Oh, yeah, because I quickly just want to say we've got about 40-something reviews, and I really want to get up to 50 by Christmas. So come on, Pogs. You can help us with this.
Help us. Help
just
us.
Good reviews.
5 stars.
Good
iTunes.
Point. So it's a goodbye from me.
It's a goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.